and welcome to Worlds Apart. The return of Donald Trump to the White House certainly opens up a new chapter in the American political drama that's got many around the world fatigued with its high pitch, flashy effects, and at times promiscuous ethics. Will this reality show ever end? Can American politics come back to its founding and authentically practiced values of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Peter Kuznick, a professor of history at American University. Professor Kuznick, it's great to see you again. Thank you very much for your time.
Glad to be with you.
Now, I know that you've looked extensively into the history of the American presidency, and I think the United States, more than any other country, you can sort of draw conclusions about the state of the society based on the kind of personalities that are vying for power. In this sense, what do you think the second coming of Trump signifies?
Well, it's interesting that you use the term second coming, because that was the image that Trump gave in his inaugural address, that somehow God had saved him and God's purpose was to make America great again, and Trump was his vessel for doing so.
And many people who support him tend to express a similar kind of attitude.
They do. They're very uneducated. There are also a lot of people who think he's the second coming of Satan. I'd be closer to the second camp than to the first camp. There's something very, very different about Donald Trump as president. And in some ways, we have to separate his domestic policy, hopefully, from his foreign policy. Although, if we base that on his first term in office, that's not so clear.
I wouldn't be so condescending of Donald Trump and his base simply because their ability to put forth a more educated candidate, somebody who can argue a somewhat different point of view from the mainstream, has been rather constrained, was it not? I mean, to some extent, Trump is, you can say, an ugly, but still the child of the American political system.
Well, he's the bastard stepson of the American political system in that regard. He has a lot of popularity in certain sectors. I mean, his base is iron tight. I mean, no matter what he does, he said he could shoot somebody in broad daylight on Fifth Avenue and he wouldn't lose a single vote. So, you know, that base of his will stick with him and they believe in him. And so far, it doesn't seem that no matter what he does, he's going to lose them.
But Professor Kuznick, let me just interject here a little bit, because we've had a lot of educated, you know, highly polished American leaders like President Obama, who wouldn't speak such a foul language, who wouldn't give speeches about, you know, shooting somebody in broad daylight. And yet they are responsible historically. They're responsible for, you know, many, many people dying as a consequence of their policies. So, you know, Trump being flashy in his rhetoric, but rather modest in his war fighting, isn't that better than somebody, let's say, educated with long fingers, aesthetically looking, but, you know, launching wars that plunge whole countries into the dark ages?
You could make a good case that Biden's policies, foreign policy, was terrible, that Biden did help militarize the planet, and that Trump sometimes sounds like he's going to be a peacemaker. In his inaugural address, he said, "I want to be a peacemaker." Then he went on to say that he wants to take back the Panama Canal. He went on to lie about it. He said that China runs the canal. It doesn't. He said that 38,000 Americans died building that canal. The figure that we have is 5,600 Americans. And he said, we're going to take it back. You know, so what is Trump? Is it just his rhetoric or is it the ugliness that he spews? We'll have to see. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that maybe he'll do something better vis-a-vis Russia and Ukraine, vis-a-vis the Middle East, and vis-a-vis China. But during his first term in office, his policy toward China was very hostile. He had a trade war with China. He sanctioned China, as he sanctioned Russia. And you have to remember, if you want to talk about it honestly, who was the one who gave lethal aid to Ukraine? It wasn't Obama. Obama refused to do so. Obama said Ukraine is much more strategic interest of Russia than the United States. He refused to give lethal aid. Trump comes in there, not only increasingly sanctions Russia, but gives lethal aid to Ukraine. So there's a lot of blame to go around. And almost all these American presidents since Kennedy have a lot of blood on their hands.
Now, you wrote before that it was Trump's anti-war stance that was one of the underplayed factors that pushed him to his election victory. And I wonder, what do you exactly mean by anti-war? Is it sort of a stance against war or a stance against spending on war?
Well, that's a good question. What I said during the campaign is the fact that the Democrats have become so weak, so corrupt, so taken over by neocons and war hawks that Trump could position himself during the campaign as the peace candidate and the pro-working class candidate means that the world is upside down. And American politics are upside down. But so I'm a very big critic of the Democratic Party, what has happened to the Democratic Party, what they've turned into. But I'm also a big critic of Donald Trump, although he did say some good things during the campaign. He said that, you know, that the Ukraine war is a very stupid war in terms of everybody's interests, and we need to bring it to an end as quickly as possible. I agree with him. That would be wonderful. But you heard what Zelensky said yesterday at Davos. He said that he wants 200,000 troops, including U.S. troops, in order to come to a peace settlement. Well, the United States is not about to put thousands of troops into Ukraine, and Putin is never going to accept that. And so what Zelensky's saying, now we don't know what Trump's response is going to be yet, but Trump did threaten Russia. And he threatened Russia. He says if Russia doesn't come to the bargaining table, and we don't know what deal Trump wants them to cut, he said he's going to increase the sanctions, going to increase arms to Ukraine, and make Russia pay a price. He's already talking about energy sanctions, more energy sanctions against Russia.
But with all due respect, Professor Kuznick, there have been so many rounds of sanctions rolled against Russia by the United States that, you know, quite a few of us here are rather skeptical of the U.S. ability to hurt us much more. But this is a very important issue that you're raising, because all of us, we do have, many of us at least, have relatives in Ukraine. You know, our economy, our society is suffering from this prolonged conflict. So definitely there is a, you know, humanitarian, economic, political, cultural, spiritual need to put an end to it.
Absolutely. Because let me say, if this war continues another 6 months, another 12 months, from the perspective of the Ukrainian people, they're going to be in worse shape. Russia's going to take more Ukrainian territory. There are going to be tens, hundreds of thousands more dead and wounded on both sides. The economies are going to be hurt. So continuing this war is not in Russia's interest. It's not in Ukraine's interest. It's certainly not in America's interest, except those Americans who want to see Russia weakened. But the only ones who profit from this are the merchants of death, the military manufacturers. And when Trump says he wants to NATO to increase its military spending from 2% to 5% of GDP, I mean, that is exactly the opposite direction that the world needs to go. In fact, the United States, if the U.S. were going to increase to 5% of GDP, the U.S. would have to spend an additional $500 billion a year. But Trump is so ignorant, he doesn't know that or doesn't care.
Now, he may be ignorant, but there are a lot of people around him who may have here and may suggest some policy that may look appealing to him, but in the medium run would be detrimental. And what I'm talking about here is that Trump made it clear that he doesn't want to spend more American funds on the Ukrainian conflict. But there are lots of analysts who sort of suggest that he should try to hand over the financing of this conflict to the Europeans, which would keep Europe tied to Washington and Russia tied up in a low-intensity conflict. Wouldn't that be a good deal for the Americans? Do you think it could be sold to Trump, to the Trump administration as a good deal?
Oh, Trump will sell anything he does as a good deal. And he just make up the facts as he goes along because he doesn't care about truth. However, it would be a terrible deal for the American people. What's in America's interest right now is a peaceful world, a world in which the United States gets along with Russia and China and Iran and even North Korea. And we stop this warmongering on a global scale. Putin has indicated in response to some things that Trump said that he wants to talk to the United States about cutting back on nuclear weapons. So what we need is that kind of vision, those kind of actions. You know, as much as you hear me as a critic of Trump, I was just in Oslo. I was a member of the Nihon Hidankyo delegation to the Nobel Peace Prize. I nominated them for the Nobel Peace Prize. I've said if Trump will eliminate nuclear weapons and create a more peaceful world, I'll nominate him for the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, so I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt if he's going to do good things. But I see what he's doing already inside the United States, and it's making a crueler, vindictive, painful, you know, ugly country inside the United States. Is he going to be able to act globally in a different way? So far, I'm not seeing it.
It looks like many people around the world, or many leaders, are trying, including yourself, are trying to come up with their sort of own way of dealing with the paradox of Trump. And you are in a good company here because President Putin just a couple of hours ago described Donald Trump as pragmatic and trustworthy. And he actually said that he agrees with Trump despite all this somewhat blackmailing rhetoric that we heard from Trump over the last couple of days. He said that he agrees with Trump that had he been in office, the Ukrainian conflict would have never started and the sort of this kinetic phase of it would have never proceeded. Do you take that as a sort of as an effort by Putin to flatter perhaps Donald Trump? Or do you think indeed that there may be some historical or geopolitical basis for such kind of argument?
You know, it's one of those counterfactuals that we'll never know. Biden had every opportunity to try to come to an agreement with Russia before the invasion. You know, I agree that this should never have happened. And that the expansion of NATO to Russia's doorstep was a stupid policy, parochial and also a blind policy on the part of Biden and of NATO and of Ukraine. So is it possible that if Trump had been in there, that he would have made a deal? You know, Trump likes to make deals. But you have to remember that Trump doesn't like to make equal deals. Trump likes to, the Chinese talk about win-win diplomacy. The Americans think in terms of zero-sum game. We win and you lose. Trump said, the Americans get tired of winning. We're going to win constantly. And he's saying the same thing again. I've heard from people who like Trump, who voted for Trump, who now are sickened by what they've seen already. And he hasn't even been in office a week yet. So is it possible? Yes. Would it have been doable? Absolutely. And Trump is not motivated. He has no sense of compassion. He has no sense of everybody benefiting. He wants America to be great again and to dominate. But he wants to do so in a way that I think is not only bullying, I mean, he's even trying to bully Russia. It doesn't work with Vladimir Putin.
Let me stop you here because this is a fascinating subject that we will come back to after a short break. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Hollywood. Welcome to LA. Welcome to Dreamland, where dreams come true.
We have approximately 10 million people in California that are at risk of becoming unhoused.
Looks good, man.
Some people are working 2-3 jobs and still not enough because the cost of living also has increased.
Because of COVID and Joe Biden.
Just last year alone, the amount of homeless rose by 12% in California.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Peter Kuznick, a professor of history at American University. Professor, just before the break, you were talking about Trump's liking to do deals and sell them very flamboyantly. And yet, I think there is an openness, at least on the Russian side, on the Russian president's side, to engage in some sort of consultations. But I see here a major sort of form versus substance problem, because Russia doesn't need just any kind of deal. Russia needs a very detailed deal with every little thing thought through and with some security guarantees that it will be upheld, not only by Trump, but by successive administrations. And Vladimir Putin, we know he's very meticulous about things like that, whereas Donald Trump doesn't seem to have much skill or much patience for this kind of approach. Do you think these differences of personality, of style, of, governing philosophy, do you think they can be overcome?
Yes, I do think they can be overcome. I mean, not because Donald Trump is going to change, but because it's possible for him to have statesmen around him who can do it. Right now, it's not looking like it. If you look at the people he's nominated and appointed, they're not the kind of people who can carry out this kind of deal. For example, his choice for Secretary of Defense, Pete the Pervert Hegseth. I mean, can you imagine? There was a 19th century word that called kakistocracy, which means government by the worst people. And that seems to be what Trump is doing. Hegseth is not competent in any way to be Secretary of Defense. He would be even worse than Trump in terms of making this kind of arrangement. So is it possible? Yes, but he would need different kind of people. What we see happening is that he's firing all the career civil servants who have not been supporting his policies. So we're seeing an across the board sweeping firing of competent people, and he's going to replace them with these sycophants and ideologues and MAGA people. And these are, for the most part, not very competent people. Even when it comes to China, he's been saying much more conciliatory things toward China, but look at the people he's bringing in there. These are the China hawks, the Marco Rubios.
Professor Kuznick, can I make a suggestion here? Because America prides itself on being a democracy, and it's true that some of his appointment choices are rather unorthodox, to be diplomatic, but you have a vibrant academic business, scientific community. Isn't it the time for some of those people with not only with reputation, but with true expertise to come forward and offer something, not rely only on the presidential office, but, for example, on issues of nuclear disarmament that Putin is ready to discuss with Trump? You know, you have a lot of people, knowledgeable people, who can come forward and suggest something.
Absolutely. And most of them are very, very disappointed with what's happened so far. I know that I was giving him the benefit of the doubt. I went on Tucker Carlson's show with Oliver Stone, and we talked about all the potential there is now. But even Tucker Carlson was very worried about the neoconservatives who Trump was appointing, because they know, and we know, that they're going to try to persuade him not to do the better things that he was talking about, bringing peace around the world, but they're going to try to persuade him to pursue the America First, American hegemony agenda. And so, yeah, there are good people. But when we look at Trump's nuclear policies during his first term in office, they're very, very disappointing. When he found the first discussion he had with Putin, Putin said, let's extend the New START treaty. Trump puts down the phone and asks the people, what's the New START treaty? He didn't even know. Then he gets on and says, no, it's a bad treaty. We don't want to extend it. And he pulled the United States out of not only the New START treaty, which he refused to extend, but also the INF treaty, Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces treaty, the Open Skies treaty, the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, which Russia was instrumental in helping secure. Trump, when he was told at a meeting that the U.S. had dramatically lowered the nuclear arms, number of nuclear arms we have from the peak in 1886 down to the numbers we have now, Trump said, I want to increase our nuclear arsenal.
Professor Kuznick, I see your frustration with your new president, but it's not our fault, at least this time around. I mean, this is the American society that put this person into office. And, you know, that's why I asked you this broader question before about, you know, the personality of the president reflecting the state of the society. And I've been, you know, sort of exploring the American approach to public relations for quite some time. I studied in the United States, and it always, not even fascinated, but scared me how much the Americans are willing to take perception for reality. And you even have a slogan, I think, that goes back to one of Ronald Reagan's political advisors saying that it's possible. But we know from scientific cognitive studies that, you know, there is a consequence to it. And when people do that on a repeated basis and broadly within the society, that leads to not only a loss of touch with reality, but even mild psychosis. Haven't you gotten what you have practiced only in the most outrageous form?
I would say that a lot of it has to do with the media, and that first, that Trump voters tended to be low information voters. They're the less educated people in society, and they watch Fox News, and they listen to a lot of social media, and they're getting a view of things. However, you have to remember that Trump has a certain kind of performance. And by the end of his first administration, he was very unpopular. His approval ratings were quite low. People had gotten tired of his shtick. And when he ran for re-election, Biden beat him by 7 million votes. Biden, who was never a good candidate, who had been wanting to be president for decades, was able to beat him by 7 million votes because people had gotten so tired of him. And now they're seeing what they had forgotten. You know, one of the points you're making is that Americans have very little memory. As Zhou Enlai, former Chinese premier, has said, one of the charming things about the Americans is they have absolutely no historical memory. People can't remember 4 hours ago, let alone 4 years ago, but now they're being reminded why they dislike Donald Trump so much. And the honeymoon that presidents get when they come to office is going to be over very quickly, because he hasn't done anything to help his base, his voters, who really do need help. They were hurt by inflation. And what he's doing instead, they didn't want him to release the violent criminals from January 6th, the ones who beat police officers, and Trump was too lazy to even differentiate between the violent ones and the unviolent ones. He said, F it, release them all. You know, this is not what his base wanted. They want to see something very, very different than what he's doing at this point. And I think the American people are going to be tired of it very quickly, and that within 2 years, the Republicans are going to lose in both houses unless they separate themselves much more from these policies and push back.
Well, Professor Kuznick, let me take an issue with your point that it's primarily Trump's law-educated base that fall for this kind of political and historical fibs. I'm sure you saw Trump's recent post about the Russians supposedly helping the Americans to win World War II, losing 60 million lives in the process. I'm sure you know that here in Russia, we see it in a totally different way, that we were helped by the Americans and we paid for it. You know, the land lease wasn't free of charge. But my question is, why do you think this theme of World War II victory keeps resurfacing? And why do you think it's not only Trump supporters, but, you know, respected students of your classes who also seem to fall for it?
Yeah, this is not only Americans, Europeans also. In the surveys across Europe, only 17% of the Europeans surveyed think that the Russians played an important role in winning World War II. In France, it's down to 7%. So my students are not outliers in that regard. The Americans are taught that we won World War II. The reality, as you know and I know, is that the Russians were the ones who defeated Nazi Germany, and that throughout most of the war, U.S. and Britain faced 10 German divisions between us, while Russia faced more than 200 German divisions. And so, as Churchill even admitted, it was the Red Army that tore the guts out of the German war machine. But the world doesn't learn much history. And history is very politicized. And the Americans learn American myths. The Russians learn more history, but they learn a lot of Russian myths. The Chinese, the Japan. Oliver Stone and I, when we did our speaking tour in Japan, we titled some of our talks in an article we wrote, U.S. and Japan Partners in Historical Falsification. I see all the countries doing this, and I think it's dangerous. And especially when it comes to talking about World War II. If we don't learn the lessons of the past, we're going to repeat them. And then when you see Elon Musk out there giving a fascist salute, I mean, how appalling was that to people in Russia to see Elon Musk giving a fascist salute to the Trump supporters?
Well, I think people in Russia didn't take it as such. But the point you are making is that it is just a form of ignorance, or do you think it perhaps a deliberate distortion? I'm talking about the World War II victory stuff. Is it a deliberate distortion of history to prop up national identity?
I think it's a combination of the two. You know, and that there are history wars and the governments support them. And they understand more than the public does how important people's understanding of the past is for how they see the present. You know, we lived through the Cold War, which was a horrible period in history. And now we're closer to nuclear war now than we've been at any time since the Cuban Missile Crisis, maybe the closer than any time ever, which is why it's so important that the leaders of Russia, China, the United States, India, and others sit down and talk and figure how to ease these tensions, to settle them peacefully through diplomacy.
Absolutely. On this uplifting point, let's leave it there. Hopefully somebody in some office will hear us and take advice from that. But thank you very much for being with us today, Professor Kuznick.
Thank you for a lively discussion.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.